Welcome to Small World, Big Problems, a podcast from the Philip Merrill Center for Strategic Studies at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies in Washington, D.C. My name is Noah Martin, and today I'm joined by Dr. Calla Hummel to discuss the current political and economic situation in Bolivia, as well as what the future may hold. In 2005, Evo Morales led the MAS party to power as the first indigenous president in the country's history. His early years in office included the nationalization of the country's natural resource exports, namely natural gas. He used this policy to finance social programs and infrastructure improvements that bolstered the country's GDP and decreased poverty levels. These natural resource revenues, however, have started to decline, and Bolivia is now facing economic challenges that won't be easily overcome. In addition, Luis Arce, the current president, who was recently expelled from the MAS party, has raised questions about Evo Morales' return, despite being against the country's constitution. With both economic and political uncertainty, there are a lot of questions to be answered. What does the future of the MAS party look like? How can Bolivia stimulate the levels of economic growth it saw 10 years ago? And what lessons can the country learn from past and current oversights to promote sustained development? Today, we will be discussing this with Dr. Calla Hummel. Dr. Hummel is an associate professor at the University of Miami's Department of Political Science. Z was formerly a visiting scholar at the Graduate Program in Development at La Universidad Mayor de San Andrés in La Paz, and has won multiple awards for Z's work. Z's recent book, Why Informal Workers Organized, won the 2023 Riker Prize for Best Book in Political Economy. Z's research focuses on how marginalized communities organize to form powerful political interest groups, and Z has specifically examined street vendor unions in La Paz, Bolivia, and São Paulo, Brazil. More recently, Dr. Hummel has published work on coordinated Latin American health policy during the COVID-19 pandemic and LGBTQ politics in the Americas. Dr. Hummel, thank you for joining us today. I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
Great. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about Bolivian politics more.
Great. Well, we're excited to hear about it. So yeah, just to get started, I'd love to hear a little bit about some background on Bolivian politics over the past few years, and just a little bit about what the state of the MAS party is right now.
Yeah, so Bolivian politics have been dramatic and complicated for the last few years, as they've been throughout all of the region. The relevant background that listeners should have is that Evo Morales came to power in 2006. He was then in office from 2006 to 2019. He's one of the longest serving Bolivian leaders, and this was a period of political and economic stability and growth. We had lots of people rising out of poverty into the middle class. There was sustained GDP growth for pretty much the whole time. And generally just a good period in Bolivia. Bolivian history, looking at political, economic, and social indicators. But over that time, Morales' support frayed a lot. He sidelined a lot of former allies. He created a number of enemies. He also increasingly started to concentrate power and make some undemocratic moves by, say, packing the courts with supporters and running for a fourth term that was against the constitution and that Bolivians roundly rejected in a referendum, or not roundly, it was like a 52% vote, but Bolivians had rejected in a referendum. And so by 2019, his support had eroded considerably. So there's an election in 2019 that causes a big political crisis in the country where there's allegations of fraud on Morales's and the MAS's part. Morales's party is the Movement Towards Socialism, more commonly known as the MAS. There's this big crisis, Morales resigns, and then Jeanine Añez comes into the presidency as this little-known transitional president, also has a very controversial presidency. And then there's finally elections held in November 2020. The MAS returns to power, but not with Evo Morales at the head. Evo Morales is in exile in Mexico at this point, with his former finance minister, Luis Arce, at the head with his vice president, David Choquehuanca. And Arce and Choquehuanca have been running the Bolivian administration since 2020. They won with a kind of surprising majority in the first round of the vote. So a lot of Bolivian elections have many people competing in the first round. It's often uncommon for anyone to win an outright majority in the first round. And Arce and Chuquicamata were able to consolidate support in 2020 and win outright in the first round. So they've been governing with a pretty strong mandate from Bolivian voters for the last 4 years. However, there's lots of problems and controversies and issues. We're going to talk about several, but probably the two most prominent right now is that there is a monetary crisis. So Bolivia's foreign reserves have been declining precipitously. We don't really know how much is left, but it's under $2 billion. That was the last report. And part of that is because natural gas production and exports have been declining for the last 10 years. And so Bolivia has not been bringing in very many or as much foreign reserves. And so there's monetary crisis that's leading to, there's now a black market for foreign exchange. It's causing a bunch of different problems, probably will continue to cause a bunch of problems. And then there's also a big split between Morales and Arce. So Morales initially selected Arce to be his successor, and they worked very closely in the Morales administration, where Arce was the finance minister for pretty much the whole time that Morales was president. They now have a huge schism. Morales was behind Arce getting kicked out of the MAS party briefly last year. And Morales has declared his intention to run again in 2025. And Arce also plans to run again in 2025. So there is a very prominent battle between the two presidents that is dividing the MAS party now.
Given the current situation with the future of Morales and Arce, what do people think that this will look like, a potential election between the two? And also, what does that mean for opposition parties like Comunidad Ciudadana and Creemos?
I don't believe that anybody knows what this is going to look like over the next year. So I was recently in Bolivia doing some fieldwork and presenting some research on another project. And I talked with a lot of people about what was going on with the monetary crisis and with the schism in the MAS and where they thought it was going to go. And the overwhelming response was, well, I don't know where it's going to go, but it's going to be ugly. So people are expecting that these two are going to continue to fight it out, probably to the detriment of national politics over the next year. What's pretty certain is that this is dividing the MAS voting bloc. So the MAS voting bloc has been pretty cohesive, and at least in comparison to past Bolivian voting blocs, MAS voters have delivered majorities pretty consistently for MAS candidates at the national level, especially the presidency. But Arce has a fair amount of the voter support and Morales has a fair amount of the voter support. And so them running separate campaigns is going to divide that voting bloc into much smaller pieces. So the last polling numbers I saw were saying that Arce had about 18% of the vote of likely voters if the election was held tomorrow, and Morales had 9% of the vote of likely voters if the election was held tomorrow. So we're splitting a majority into much smaller slivers, also with now a bunch of less committed voters. I believe that this presents an opportunity for the opposition. However, the opposition has historically not taken advantage of a number of opportunities, in part because they all have their own interpersonal fights and interparty fights as well with each other. And so we tend to see the opposition split into these pretty small warring factions already. And there's lots that we can debate about exactly why that is, but I expect that we'll see the opposition continue its factional politics as MAS also descends into its own factional politics.
Yeah, it's interesting to see sort of what divisions this will drive over the coming years, really. So going back to economics, you touched a little bit on that after the first question. I'd love to hear a bit about what went so well for such a long time. You know, why was GDP rising so much? And what has changed? What change has caused GDP to fall? What has caused this foreign exchange crisis and falling exports?
Yeah, so the main thing that went well was resource prices. So the natural resources that Bolivia was exporting had high prices for a while, and they were able to capitalize on that. Unfortunately for Bolivia and lots of other countries and exporters, you can't control the price of natural resources. It's inherently going to be a cyclical boom-bust type pattern, and that's a lot of what we've seen since 2014. So prices have declined, and then also production has declined on the Bolivian side as well. The other thing, though, that went well and in some ways is continuing to go well and can continue to go well are some of the policy choices from the Bolivian administrations, and especially the policy choices that Arce made as finance minister and as president. So Bolivia really switched to a model that emphasized investment in the social safety net and in reducing poverty, especially in the early 2000s, and then that really intensified under the Morales administration and under Arce as finance minister. And so there's been a lot of policies through cash transfer programs and investments in the health and education system that have really helped a lot of people move up out of poverty, and then that has also increased people's productivity, individuals' ability to start their own businesses and sustain themselves. And so all of those policy choices have also paid off significant dividends for the Bolivian economy overall, as well as the Bolivian population. Those policies have also gone hand in hand with a number of subsidies, which are very popular, but they have become a problem as the natural resource prices have declined and the Bolivian government hasn't had as much money coming in to pay for some of these more expensive policies. So one thing I'd like to note is that some of these policies that have lots of positive social dividends aren't that expensive. Like a lot of the cash transfer programs aren't actually a huge hit on the budget. And some of them pay for themselves pretty quickly, right? So I'm going to forget the name of the specific bonus, but there's some of these policies that say give money to expectant mothers and pay for prenatal care and give money to families that have kids in elementary school. Those kinds of things, relatively cheap, have huge benefits. They're not taking a big ding on the budget. But there's also a bunch of subsidies, especially the fuel subsidies that have been in place for a long time, that are extremely expensive. They disproportionately benefit certain sections of the population. They don't overall benefit the whole population. And again, this isn't just in Bolivia. This is anywhere that has these kinds of subsidies. And they do take up a lot of the budget. So the fuel subsidies in particular have been taking up hundreds of millions of dollars every year for years. And that's one of the big things behind the monetary crisis that we see now.
So with all of these, you know, some more expensive than others, but with a lot of these social policies, them having trouble funding them, you know, what happens next for Bolivia? How can they sort of be able to keep them going? Because they're super popular and, from what I understand, very crucial to MAS support as well.
Yeah, so this is the multi-billion dollar question. So I expect that the cheaper policies, the cash transfer programs, those are going to stay in place. They're popular with voters, they're not that expensive, and they widely benefit everyone. But the big question is what's going to happen with the fuel subsidies. So the obvious thing would be to cut the fuel subsidies, but the transport sector, and especially the transportation unions, really, really depend on those subsidies. And they have the power to shut the country down, to shut politics down, to generate a political crisis. I and many of the people that I've talked to, scholars in Bolivian universities, journalists, other observers, believe that that's why those fuel subsidies haven't been cut, is because of the risk of extreme social unrest that would come from the transportation sector. Also, the huge potential economic hits of the transportation sector shutting the country and the economy down for a while. Arce is a very intelligent and strategic person, and so he certainly has explored this possibility and not taken that route because it's not feasible for his administration. But there's not really any other good solutions. So what the government's been doing for the last year is trying a bunch of different accounting maneuvers to try to stretch the foreign reserves that they have. And eventually those counting maneuvers are going to run out. So they've been selling gold to make up for foreign reserves. They've been really, really restricting the amount of dollars that anyone can access. Those are causing all kinds of small problems and some big problems, namely the black market for dollars. It's really impacting importers as well as the prices of some specific things that Bolivia needs to import. And so we'll see where this goes. It's quite possible that they're forced to cut the subsidies and we see some kind of social unrest resulting from that. It's possible that they find other sources of funding, that the administration is able to get loans in foreign currency and other possibilities. One of the things that the administration has been exploring is exploiting the lithium reserves, the very, very considerable lithium reserves in the country, to try to bring foreign currency in. But those are not, it's not scalable anytime soon. So even in the best case scenario, it would still take a few years before Bolivia's lithium production scales up to any kind of considerable commercial level that could bring in significant foreign reserves. And the administration's almost definitely going to need dollars before then.
Absolutely. And I want to come back to lithium a little bit later. But before we go there, I want to hear a little bit about MAS's development approach. Historically, it's been very statist. It's been very much driven by the state, lots of nationalizations of natural resources. And there seems to be this tension because their rhetoric has also been very much statist and against foreign investment and private enterprise. But at this point in time, it seems like private enterprise might provide some green shoots for them and help them escape this situation. So given that there's sort of this disconnect between the rhetoric and potentially the sustainability of the economic policies that they have right now, do you see a future with private enterprise in Bolivia? Do you think that could undermine the MAS's party message? So what do you think this all looks like?
Yeah, so there's this big tension between what the MAS says and does on a national level, especially with regards to state-led development, and then the reality of many Bolivian entrepreneurs, which is very much a private enterprise reality. So as you said, Bolivia has nationalized a variety of different enterprises, natural resources, especially foreign-owned companies, over the last century. It's not just the MAS government who's done this. Bolivia has a long history of nationalizing, especially foreign-owned natural resource extraction. And this pretty clearly has created conditions under which foreign firms are extremely skeptical about investing in Bolivia and starting new projects in Bolivia because they've seen most successful projects get nationalized in some sense. And current Bolivian law also requires, if I'm remembering correctly, also requires any foreign enterprise to have a Bolivian partner who has at least a majority or at least a 51% stake in the enterprise. So these are not the conditions that most foreign businesses are going to want to do business under. And as you mentioned, the Bolivian government has invested a lot of money into creating state businesses that then run a variety of different things inside the country, some much more successfully than others. However, there's also lots and lots of private enterprise within the country. So there's lots of small and medium businesses. Most Bolivians are self-employed or informally employed in these small and medium businesses. I work a lot with street vendors and also with a variety of other kinds of informal businesses. And I've worked with lots of informal entrepreneurs and businesses in Bolivia for the last 15 years. And so most people are using the free market and private enterprise to pay for their lives, to develop their careers, to invest in their businesses, and also to invest in Bolivia. So lots of these are generating profits that are then going back into the local economy. So I don't think that private enterprise is going to like resolve Bolivia's monetary crisis. I think that's very much a public accounts situation. But there is a lot of cash being generated by small and local businesses in the country, and those will probably continue to carry a significant portion of the Bolivian economy.
Got it. And do you think there is a future of an increased foreign partnership, given that Bolivia's having trouble financing further natural gas and oil exploration and those types of activities?
Yes, there's certainly a future in which Bolivia can reignite foreign investment in the country. The current and past Bolivian administrations are not taking clear steps in that direction. They've been very wary of foreign direct investment for years, and any agreements between foreign governments or foreign companies aren't signaling a complete reversal of those stances. It's just kind of a piecemeal approach. So should Bolivian administrations want to encourage foreign direct investment in the future, there needs to be sustained policy change and demonstration to foreign businesses that they can invest, that they will be able to have a predictable business environment, that the policies are going to be clear and predictable, and that the government is not going to expropriate when it makes sense for them. And up until this point, we haven't seen the Bolivian government really clearly commit to that. What we're seeing more of is these state-to-state agreements and negotiations where, say, the Bolivian government is talking to Chinese companies that have some involvement with the Chinese government about developing lithium sources, and occasionally similar agreements with companies from other countries.
All right, so now I want to move into lithium. So Bolivia has the biggest untapped lithium reserves in the world. That's obviously got huge potential for, you know, green energy and, you know, an export economy, potentially even a battery economy. They nationalized these reserves over 10 years ago, I believe. And so what has gone so wrong that Bolivia is not a lithium player on the world stage?
So I wouldn't say necessarily that things have gone very wrong. It's more that Bolivia has been very stagnant in its approach. They've been very cautious and very wary. And there's pros and cons to that. On one hand, Bolivia has a history of relying on natural resource extraction to fuel the economy, and it hasn't always gone well for Bolivia. As I mentioned earlier, relying on natural resource extraction for your economy is very cyclical. It often leads to these really neocolonial dynamics that don't benefit the country that's producing a lot of resources. So it's not necessarily a terrible idea to be really cautious about developing new reserves and really cautious about developing a new resource. The stated policy of the Bolivian administration since the discovery of these huge lithium deposits has been to try to not just export lithium, but also create a more value-added economy around lithium, where lithium is extracted in Bolivia, but also refined in Bolivia and turned into, say, lithium-ion batteries in Bolivia. So one of the things that they have asked for, and in some cases required from some of these companies that have wanted to extract lithium in Bolivia, is that those companies also have some kind of technology transfer agreement where Bolivia as a state and as a society benefits from the technical requirements of extracting, refining, and then making products out of lithium. Now, those are really high demands. And so this has not played out, and it has not resulted in Bolivia actually developing that supply chain and that value-added economy. So where Bolivia has been for quite a while is having these kind of pilot projects in the Salar de Uyuni that extract very small amounts of lithium and then refine very small amounts of lithium. And so Bolivia has been unable to scale any of those projects into commercial production. And again, there's some benefits to that. Bolivia is going to continue to have a very large reserve of a very valuable resource. And maybe it's a great idea to take it slow. But it also does mean that Bolivia has missed out on potentially billions of dollars over the last few years. And they could really use that now that there's a monetary crisis.
Absolutely. It does seem like it's something that they could really take advantage of at some point in the future, if not at the present moment. You mentioned Chinese involvement in the region. And it's interesting because the U.S. has typically sort of been the hegemon in Latin America. And while Bolivia sort of had a more anti-American stance for a long time. There's starting to see more shifts in general in Latin America towards Chinese involvement. I would love to hear about what you've seen in Bolivia with respect to Chinese involvement and what that might mean for Latin America at large.
Yeah, so there's a lot of Chinese involvement in the Bolivian economy and increasingly, to some extent, in Bolivian politics. And this mirrors a lot of the Chinese involvement that we've seen across Latin America and Africa as China tries to extend its influence by offering these loans to governments, often in exchange for natural resources. Bolivia very much falls into that. So China has offered a variety of different kinds of loans and other preferential agreements. And Bolivia has jumped at that and also often needed that. So there's a variety of development projects throughout Bolivia that have relied on Chinese companies to do them and Chinese financing to finance them. And this is what we have been seeing in the lithium space for the last few years. There's also the added benefit here that there's not that many countries around the world that have companies that have the technology to extract and refine lithium. China is one of the few countries that does have a few companies that can extract and refine lithium. So the agreements to potentially scale lithium production from the last few years have been with Chinese companies. However, they have not been able up to this point to scale production. And even if everything goes absolutely according to plan, which it typically doesn't with any lithium producer, and certainly with any, state, private, public agreement, this isn't just a Bolivia thing. Even if things went fully according to plan, which we don't expect that they will, it would still take a few years before those current agreements, I don't think any of them are actually in production right now, could scale up into commercial lithium production. And again, I said something about the administration could really use this a few minutes ago. And I want to stress that the administration knows this and they're very much trying to capitalize on it right now. This isn't a situation of a lack of political will. This is a situation of these things take a very long time. They're very controversial and they're very complicated. And so lithium is not a silver bullet to Bolivia's monetary problems simply because of the complications and scale of producing lithium anywhere in the world.
So with that all said, what do you think, lithium, but also just other parts of the Bolivian economy and the current political situation, what do you think that all means for the country's political and economic future?
It's shaky right now. So things are tentatively stable right now in Bolivia. The administration is tentatively stable, but it feels like there's a variety of different things that could set off potential political crises, not least of which is this division between Morales and Arce and the splits between their voters. And of course, monetary crises and economic crises can destabilize any country. And so there's a pretty big likelihood that this monetary crisis is going to deepen and cause a inflationary crisis or a foreign exchange crisis. And should that happen, it's highly probable that that's going to roll over into fueling a political crisis as well.
Dr. Hummel, thank you so much for your time today. I've really enjoyed hearing from your perspective on Bolivian issues, and thank you so much for your time.
Great. Thank you so much, Noah.
For all of our listeners out there, Small World, Big Problems is a student-led production sponsored by the Philip Merrill Center for Strategic Studies at Johns Hopkins University's Paul H. Nitzsche School of Advanced International Studies, located in Washington, D.C. Small World, Big Problems can be found on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to become a part of the podcast, suggest a guest for the show, or just send us your feedback, please email us at sicestrategypodcast@gmail.com. This episode was researched by myself and edited by Dylan Yachishin and myself. An extra thanks goes out to Elena Mikhailian. I'm Noah Martin, and I want to thank you for taking the time to listen to this podcast. We'll be back soon with a new episode. See you all soon.